And a pleasant good day from wherever you may be hearing the sound of my voice. We got a new audience checking in right now. Allow me to introduce myself. I am Willie Martin, affectionately known as Mr. Will. Mr. Will, a nickname that I have had since 1995, 1996, back in my formative years in the great Northwest, Southwest Washington, Seattle, Washington, for many years at 95.7 KJRFM, Seattle. This all began, this journey, I guess you could say, February 4th, 2012, courtesy of one Cedric Bailey, who essentially said, podcasting, the thing, hop on board, I'll take you places. And Cedric Bailey has been true to his word. So, to you fine people listening on this particular network, I say good day, happy holidays. I hope that all is going in the manner that you would like. I know that Santa knows you've been good. Don't prove me wrong. That's all I want to say in that regard. And before I get to discussing and completely ranting and raving about that debacle, that layup, that letdown, that choke, that crazy finish in Arlington against Green Bay, I am reminded that today is a day of historical content if you're a fan of the NFL. Hard to believe that 40 years have passed since we had our first ever 2,000-yard rusher and done in a 14-game season. Of course, I speak of the one and only Orenthal James Simpson, O.J. Simpson. For you younger kids out there, I want to paint you a picture. This is before MTV. This is before computers, the internet. This is before having an iPad. This is back in the day when your source of information was ABC, NBC, CBS. And if you had a really cute antenna that resembled rabbit ears, UHF for ultra high frequency. Late 60s, early 70s. Here was a guy that went to USC, set all kinds of records, post Mike Garrett, who I guess is still involved with the USC program now, had the 102-yard kickoff return in the game against UCLA, I think his senior season, I think 67 or 68. And prior to December 16th of 1973, the man who held the all-time record for rushing yards in a season, and he left the game at the age of 29 or 30, Jim Brown. One-time Cleveland Brown. Well, 1973 would prove to be a very interesting season for O.J. Simpson and his Buffalo Bills. Led behind a solid line that O.J. dubbed the Electric Company. Men like Joe Delamalur, his number one guy, Reggie McKenzie. I think Joe Ferguson was the quarterback. Jim Braxton, the fullback. Opening day, 1973, September 16th, O.J. Simpson served notice that he was going to be a name and a face to be reckoned with and recognized. 250 yards on the ground in an opening game against New England. There will be other games like this. However, we would not become familiar with the name of O.J. Simpson until the night of October 29th, 1973, a Monday night game that was held at Orchard Park or Orchard Stadium in Buffalo, New York, against the Kansas City Chiefs. He ran for 157 yards, and of course, Howard Cosell back in that day was making Monday Night Football the thing, with audiences of 50 million strong. People began to notice that this kid, O.J. Simpson, had a slashing and running ability that was second to none. And he would continue to have great games that year. In a year that Buffalo went 9-5, didn't quite make the playoffs. And as they got down to the final week of the season, 40 years ago today, December 16th, O.J. Simpson entered that game at Shea Stadium, wintry, blustery Shea Stadium, a ballpark where the Mets played their games in the summer, and the Jets dealt with crazy conditions and a whipping wind, a tough wind that would wreak havoc for quarterbacks when November and December rolled around for opponents. Nonetheless, O.J. Simpson entered that final week of the season with 1,803 yards, 60 behind tying Jim Brown, 61 from tying or setting the all-time record for himself. Early in the first half, it was essentially going to be a game where O.J. is going to run the ball repeatedly. And 1 year prior, he ran for 1,251 yards. So this was just upper echelon territory for number 32, the juice. Early in the second period, it would be O.J. Simpson setting the rushing record. And a funny side note, at that point, Reggie McKenzie said, "Now you can run the ball," and O.J. would fumble the very next play. Nonetheless, as they neared halftime, someone pointed out that O.J. Simpson was nearing the 1,900-yard mark, and how would he feel about being the first-ever 2,000-yard rusher? Well, lo and behold, the Jets were a sorry 4-10 that year. Jets, I still think, maybe an anagram for just end the season. Sorry, Jets fans. Sorry, R.J. Choppy. But in that second half, O.J. kept running the ball, and he would ultimately get to the 2,003-yard mark. And that was the standard that was set until Eric Dickerson would break that on a December 9th day, 1984, in Anaheim in a game against the Oilers, a game that I was at in which the Rams won 27-16. But this day, 40 years ago, it was O.J. Simpson and the Electric Company proceeding to put a whipping in a wind-whipped and snow-flurried Shea Stadium to the tune of 34-14, and O.J. Simpson set a standard for getting 2,000 yards, not in a 16-game season, but a 14-game season. And hard to believe that we have now had a 16-game season in the NFL for 36 years, dating back to the start of the 1978 season. Side note on Jim Brown, by the way, before he made it big in football for the Browns and also playing at the University of Syracuse, Jim Brown also made quite a name for himself playing rugby back in the day. I'm sorry, what do they call that? Where they got the croquet sticks in their hand. I'm getting my sports mixed up now. Lacrosse. That Canadian sport. Lacrosse was the sport that O.J. Simpson made amazing happen at. Or made Jim Brown amazing happening at when a student at Syracuse back in the late 40s and early 50s. Take my first break of this segment. When I come back, we go down memory lane with the Cowboys and the Packers, and how it seems every time these two teams meet, something crazy or historical decides to happen. You are hanging with Mr. Will, and I'm coming right back. Welcome back. Hope you're having a great holiday. You are hanging with Mr. Will on this December 16th day from wherever you are listening. Great to have you there. Great to be here. New audience now checking in for maybe the first or second time. Just know that where I am concerned, if I'm not at the game live, I'm usually talking about it before or after. I am en route to tonight's Dallas Stars-Colorado Avalanche game, a back-to-back after a tough loss last night where Colorado and Paul Stastny would ignite a four-goal second period en route to a 6-4 victory over the Dallas Stars. Dallas Stars coming off a 6-4 win in Winnipeg 2 days prior. Now doing a back-to-back tonight at the American Airlines Center with the Colorado Avalanche. Colorado was here about a month ago, won in a shootout to the tune of 4-3 back on November 1st, and they are now back this night, the 17th. And then Thursday night, they will also be at home. The Stars will be to play the Vancouver Canucks. And that, of course, will elicit memories of a great playoff series back in 2007, a seven-game affair where, for the love of Mike Modano, shots just would not go into the net, but rather they would cling off the post and Vancouver would advance. Ah, yes. You know, a week ago, the Dallas Cowboys, who always seem to be a part of primetime, be it on NBC, the Monday night game, the Thursday night game, Thanksgiving Day, they had a game in Chicago. 9 degrees temperature, 8 degrees, I think, for wind chill. Second coldest game regular season history. They had a game that they played in 1963 at St. Louis that was actually colder, or so we are told. In any event, quite a few of my friends on the Monday night game with the Cowboys and Bears, they saw Dallas take to the running game, DeMarcus running left and right, getting yardage, touchdown pass, Jason Witten, Dallas up 7-0. They turned off the TV, oblivious to the fact that the Chicago Bears would have a night in which they would proceed to score on all 8 possessions, and we didn't so much as see a punt on this night, as Dallas would lose in ugly fashion to the tune of 45-20. Now, that was 1 week ago, and count me among some of the many people who decided to turn his TV off at the half when it was 24-14 and 10 points scored by the Bears in the space of about, I think, a minute and 45. When all of a sudden Dallas decides to start passing, not move the ball, not take time off the clock, and Chicago capitalized on 10 quick points, a couple of touchdowns and a field goal by Robbie Gould. Now fast forward to Sunday, December 15th. Mere moments after knowing that the Minnesota Vikings, my Minnesota Vikings, did you a favor and put an absolute whipping on the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't know how they did it. 1 week removed from a 5-touchdown and 2-minute affair, losing in Baltimore, 29-26. Fifth time they lost in the final minute of a game. No Adrian Peterson, no Christian Ponder. Yet Matt Castle, the ex-Patriot, comes out and puts up a 48 spot on Philly. Where did that come from? Did not see that coming. All Dallas had to do was win. They are back in the driver's seat. They are in first place in the East, and they control their destiny just by winning out. But no, that was not to be. Despite the fact that in the first period, the first half, excuse me, Dallas would coast to a 26-3 halftime lead. And even then, that score should have been a lot higher. 4 times you had to settle for field goals compared to touchdowns because you broke down in the red zone, despite having success running the ball with DeMarco Murray to the tune of 7.5 yards a carry, and Dez Bryant with some key drops in third down situations. Dallas would not convert on a third down until scoring on a touchdown late in the third period. So, first half, it's all Dallas. Green Bay and Matt Flynn cannot get their bearings going at all. And my first inkling was to turn off the television set. This is in the bag. There's no way that Green Bay comes back, right? But of course, I'm hearing all these voices in my head from all my Cowboy friends saying, Will, Mr. Will, these are the Cowboys. The Cowboys always find a way to make things interesting and gut-wrenching. Which I guess explains why a lot of Cowboy fans tend to smoke a lot and drink a lot at games before and after. Well, I kept the TV on. I did some cleanup in the kitchen. I had the TV on, and I knew something was definitely up when I heard the voice of Joe Buck start to get animated and Troy Aikman saying, "I can't figure this out. I can't believe what I'm seeing." Direct quotes. Second half would begin in with Green Bay getting the ball. And I guess a statement being made when Eddie Lacy, the Alabama great, would rack up a 60-yard run. Started a four-play, 80-yard drive that Green Bay would take in for a touchdown to cut the deficit to 26-10. Dallas then got the ball again, and for some inexplicable reason, they opted to want to pass instead of run. DeMarco Murray would only touch the ball, I think, seven times in that second half, after getting it for twice as many times in the first half. And for the game, DeMarco Murray ran for 146 yards. That next drive would lead Dallas, I think, to a field goal, 29-10. Green Bay then got the ball again, and now all of a sudden I'm hearing names like James Jones, James Shields, and some kid named Corliss, making key receptions on third downs. Second half alone, Green Bay would have five drives that they would score on. Five drives, five touchdowns. You add that to the whole game with the Bears, that's 13 drives, 13 scores, 13 touchdowns. Unacceptable, unbelievable, just unfathomable. Unfathomable. And as that game wound down in the second half, you're starting to hear a really loud surge of fans make their voices heard. Those were all the Packer fans who, I guess, went online and bought those Cowboy tickets from the personal seat license folks, who I guess were busier dealing with holiday stuff or holiday shopping or wanted to be with family. But that was a Packer crowd. Green Bay travels well. Pittsburgh travels well. So now the score gets to 29-17. And again, the Cowboys inexplicably get the ball, and they have a drive that lasted less than a minute, three pass plays and a punt. They began at their 20 and finished up at their 2-yard line. They have to punt. Green Bay recovers the punt on the 50, runs it back to punt the 35. And now, lo and behold, you've got yourself a 29-24 game. Green Bay was about to pick off Tony Romo and take the lead to start the fourth period, except that instant replay ruled that the Green Bay defender, number 38, the ball touched the ground. And he would get a later pick in the game, but I'll get to that in a couple of moments. That non-interception reversal fired up Dallas, at least for the moment, for this particular drive. Tony Romo finally started just connecting on passes. Again, shutting the running game. I think the final numbers on runs to passes was something like 48-18. And again, now Tony Romo's starting to connect. Miles Austin for a few yards. Jason Witten for a couple of receptions. He gets a big reception for like 35 yards. And Dez Bryant, say what you want about him off the field, on the field, he does make magic happen. His little pinky was all that got in the way of him and the Cowboys going to the playoffs last year in a 29-24 loss to the Giants after trailing 24-0, or 23-0, one or the other, in Arlington. Spectacular grab by Dez Bryant in the end zone makes the score 36-24 in the fourth period, about, I think, 9 minutes or 10 minutes left. Green Bay gets the ball again. And we now know that Dallas' defense is not going to stop anybody because they're 31st in the league. They're beat up. They're depleted. Sean Lee's not out there. Ernie Sims got taken out. He was injured. Cutler wasn't out there. Carter wasn't out there. He was injured. Matt Flynn continues to dish it off to Lacy, throw to Jordy Nelson, throw to James Jones, third down completion to Quarles. And let me backtrack for a second. The Cowboys only had two third down conversions, and that first one was when Dez caught that touchdown to put him ahead 36-24. So back comes Green Bay, back comes Matt Flynn. Matt Flynn, four touchdown pass in that final half, 299 yards. Romo throws for 358, and he's going to do what we know he's going to do as the game winds down. Touchdown, James Shields. It's now 36-31. Dallas now has the ball. It's late. Something like 2 minutes and 50 seconds left. And Dallas, I'm noticing there's a lot of jawing going on the sidelines with Garrett and Romo, with Garrett and Witten. I think nothing of it. Dallas has the ball. They start to move. And then a play where it looks like a lot of people are getting crossed up because I see DeMarco Murray in the backfield, but he's not getting the ball. Tony Romo proceeds to almost get tackled by a Packer. I think it was Carpenter or the long-haired kid. I can't think of his name now. Not Hawk, but the other one. In any event, a rush coming on to him. Tony evades that. He goes right, throws left, underthrows a pass to Miles Austin. This looked exactly like it did in the game against Denver when they lost 51-48, and he gets picked off in the final 2 minutes of a game. Again, a pickoff by the Packers. And now Green Bay is in business at midfield. My concern was whether or not Green Bay would take enough time off the clock, run down the clock, get the lead, and hold on to beat Dallas. Well, they took the ball down, length of the field, culminating with an Eddie Lacy, Sam Bam Cunningham over the top. 37-36 lead, 1:31 left. Two-point conversion failed. And now what would Dallas do? And on that interception, you saw a whole bunch of angry faces on the Cowboys sideline, including DeMarco Murray taking off his helmet and saying, "What the?" So now I'm sensing a whole bunch of dysfunction. Well, Dallas gets the ball again. We then see a pass thrown by Romo that looks to be, as ruled by the referees, ruled incomplete. And the Green Bay defender who let the ball touch the ground a few drives earlier, this time around, adamantly gets up and tells Mike McCarthy, "Throw the challenge, throw the challenge. I definitely caught this ball." And replay proved that to be. Possession reversed. Green Bay would then run out the clock with about 1:21 to go. But not before we see Dez Bryant walk off the field on his team and his teammates. We later found out because he didn't want to see Green Bay take the kneel down. He didn't want other people to see him getting teary-eyed and emotional. And we didn't want a repeat of what happened in Detroit where Dez would lose it on the sidelines and make people question his so-called character, integrity, and maturity as a player. So inexplicably, the Dallas Cowboys blow a 23-point lead and lose to Green Bay at home. I guess in reference to what Stephen Jones talked about, whatever that secret sauce was, you're not going to find it in cheese. That got sharper as the game eroded. And more like Swiss, if you want to poke holes in the Dallas Cowboy theory of play calling. Jason Garrett is going to get grilled for the next week. Do I think they win in Washington? Absolutely not. This, to me, so feels like what Ranger fans dealt with when Nelly Cruz missed that fly ball off the wall when Freeze hit it one strike away from a World Series title. You don't lose games like this and expect to bounce back. I expect Kirk Cousins to totally tear Dallas apart next week. Don't even talk about winning out. It's not going to happen. Not going to happen. For the first time in a long, long time, I can understand now the frustration that Cowboy fans feel with their franchise, with Jason Garrett, with Tony Romo, with Jerry Jones, because nothing's going to change as long as Jerry Jones is the GM. And oh, by the way, with all of these cap restrictions coming up now in the next couple of years, if you're the Cowboys, who do you go after? What do you go after? And I'll tell you one more thing. If and when the Cowboys lose in Washington next Sunday, I won't be surprised if Jason Garrett is given the heave-ho and Bill Callahan becomes your next Cowboy coach. I believe, and I've said this since day one, that this is what Jerry Jones has been working toward, the same way he did Wade Phillips 3 years ago on November 7th night when Green Bay stuck a fork in Dallas and the team quit on Wade in a 45-7 blowout. Now back to the notion of history being made whenever these two teams meet. I think back to a New Year's Day, 1967, the Cotton Bowl. First playoff run for the Cowboys in which they have a chance to go to the Super Bowl. 5 yards away from tying Green Bay, the team of the 60s, Vince Lombardi, men of dynasty. Dom Meredith, the quarterback. And a Cowboy gets called for a legal procedure, I believe John Nyland. Now you're 10 yards back, a score, maybe we're talking overtime. That doesn't happen. Don Meredith gets intercepted in the end zone. On go the Packers to the first Super Bowl, the first of two, to which they name it the Lombardi Trophy. Heartbreak for the Cowboys. How about 364 days later when they go to Green Bay and play in the Ice Bowl, where before we heard of such things as wind chill, 13 degrees below zero. There was no halftime. That was all canceled. If you ordered a cup of coffee, that was a big slushy by about the 5 minute mark after you ordered it. A game where the Dallas Cowboys had the lead for most of the day. 17-14. Some key plays from men like Renfro and Dan Reeves. And with about 24 seconds left in the game, quarterback sneak, Bart Starr behind Jerry Kramer on the ice. Footing was terrible and treacherous. Green Bay wins again, 21-17. Heartache for the Dallas Cowboys. How about an October 19th day in 1975? Dallas Cowboys sporting a bunch of rookies that year. 11 to be precise, as they go to the Super Bowl before losing to Pittsburgh. They meet an 0-4 Green Bay team, Dallas 4-0. And what do they do at Texas Stadium that day? They would proceed to lay a major egg, commit 5 turnovers, 4 fumbles, and Green Bay would capitalize on all of them. A 10-point fourth quarter. Future Giant field goal kicker Joe Dinello, a couple of key winners there in a 1917 win. This I remember off the top of my head. And then, of course, I fast forward to a game in Green Bay where Dallas won big 42-14. Ed Tuttall Jones making his presence felt. Another year where they would get to a Super Bowl and lose in dramatic fashion to the Pittsburgh Steelers, 35-31. I mentioned the 2010 game. That was Wade Phillips' last game as Cowboy coach. Then I think back to the game where if you want to make an argument about when this whole cycle of mediocrity began, how about that game with Green Bay, November 29th, 2007? A game where if you didn't have NFL Network or live in Green Bay or Dallas, you didn't get to see it. But those who did saw Tony Romo at perhaps his finest, going to his primary receiver, Patrick Creighton, not Terrell Owens, but Terrell Owens made a great decoy. And I think that was the game where we saw Terrell Owens reach for the popcorn and put it in his face from a fan's hand. That could have been another game on NBC, but I'm thinking that was the game. That was a 37-27 win for the Cowboys. Cowboys got to 12-1 on that night over Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay. And from that point onward, it was all downhill. Losing 2 of 3. The relationship announcement of Tony Romo to Jessica Simpson. I was at that game December 16th, ironically, against Philadelphia, when Michael Westbrook dropped down to a knee, and Romo seemed to be off all day. 10-6 loss. And then, of course, the loss to the Giants in the first round of the playoffs, January 13th, 2008, when Romo, late in the game, down 21-17, with throwing the double coverage and get picked off. Something always seems to happen when the Cowboys and the Packers meet. Now, for Green Bay to come back like that again against Atlanta and against Dallas, and talk of Aaron Rodgers wanting to come back and play. Oh, by the way, the Packers had not won in Dallas since 1989, the year Dallas went 1-15. The year of the Magic Man, Don Majkowski, Heart reference, great song. Yeah, absolutely. I didn't see it coming. And I also think it's very safe to say that this loss, easily the top five, I dare even say top three in Cowboy history, maybe right behind both losses to the Steelers and the Super Bowl, Super Bowls 10 and 13, just maybe. Or the Ice Bowl. Well, let's be safe and just say top five. Anything that could have gone wrong went wrong. And sadly, I just see a very dysfunctional bunch of players. Can you imagine Jimmy Johnson disciplining Dez Bryant? Can you imagine Jimmy Johnson passing all that time in the second half? And can you imagine Jimmy Johnson tolerating all that has gone on under Jerry Jones's watch in these latter-day times of 8-8 seasons? And then more than anything, and this to me is just incredulous, you have a defense that cannot stop quarterbacks or apply pressure or apply rushes. We haven't even heard the name of DeMarcus Ware in the last couple of weeks. He has not been 100%. Prior to what he wants you to believe. As terrible as the defense is, ranked 31st in so many categories, and you have 4 losses by a total of 6 points, 3 1-point losses, crazy. This could so easily be an 11-2 team, and not or a 10-3 team, and not 7-7. Or 11-3. Doing my math here. It's unbelievable. It's incredulous. It's crazy. It is beyond math. It is beyond sabermetrics. It is beyond reason. But I tell you what, you talk about the Dallas, you just mentioned the word Dallas Cowboys. Here in Texas, it is beyond religion. Anywhere else, it is a mating call for hatred or love, but they're never ignored. And much like the rock band of the 1970s Kiss, you always want to tune in and watch because you don't know what's going to happen. It's amazing. I've been in Texas now for 13 years, and it just blows me away. Some of the crazy finishes I've been privy to as a fan as an observer, as media, and just amazing. Just amazing. All right, that'll do it for this segment of Hanging with Mr. Will. To the new audience that is listening, I thank you for tuning in. I hope this was somewhat inspiring or somewhat enlightening. I'm here to tell you, I think this Cowboy team is in serious disarray. No way they win in Washington. I will be shocked if they pull off a win in Washington. I really will. Next episode, we will be talking Dallas Stars. They're in town this week for a couple. And the Mavericks, of course, they return Wednesday night. Brandon Wright back also. I didn't get a chance to cover the Milwaukee game because I was doing a private gig bartending. Yes, Will wears many hats. You'll find that out in time also. So for now, on behalf of the good people at BigGameChristianSports.net and elsewhere, I'm Mr. Will. You've been hanging with me. Talk soon.